Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car or a house. It's the four wheels that get you where you're going and the four walls that welcome you home. When you combine auto and home insurance with Amica, we'll help protect it all. And the more you cover, the more you can save. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing just fine, man.
Awesome. I'm a little tired today. I didn't sleep very well last night. The dogs got fleas and they were itching and scratching all night long and in my ear. So, good times. Was tonight a request or just something that we decided to do on our own?
I'm sure it's been requested. It's just that the first person who suggested it was you. So it's Justin's request.
I don't even remember suggesting, but oh well.
Well, if you remember back when, it kind of came about because I said we need to start covering mysteries and cryptids and things like that. And so we had discussed either doing Bigfoot or the Bermuda Triangle, and we ended up covering Bigfoot first because I said Bigfoot is massively popular.
Yeah.
And we should do that first. And you said, sure. And then I said, we'll cover Bermuda at some point. And here we are.
All right. So, you know, if you go back to 1800s, early 1900s, there's some documented mysteries about Bermuda and
there's shipwrecks and disappearances and whatever, but when did Bermuda actually kind of get called the Bermuda Triangle or the Devil's Triangle?
Yeah, as best I can tell, at first it was known as the Deadly Triangle, but if you just call something the Deadly Triangle, people will say, well, where's that at? You know, so they needed something descriptive.
That name sucks. I mean, if your band was called the Deadly Triangle, I mean, people are going to be, you know, ringing the dinner triangle and, oh, it's deadly. I mean, that's a sucky name. You got to be more foreboding. The Devil's Triangle. That one's good.
Right. And I do believe that it's been called that as well. And that has to do with Bermuda, by the way.
Why does it deal with Bermuda and the Devil's Triangle?
It's had nicknames the Devil's Isle or something like that.
Yeah.
If you're not how do I put this? People have shipwrecked over there because of the makeup. So you can't just coast through and think you're okay. You kind of have to know where you're going.
Because
you could run your ship aground or get it punctured and you'll sink.
So it's a triangle because Bermuda Island is up at the top. And then Puerto Rico is down at the bottom. And then, Miami, Florida is
off to the west.
Off to the west. So that makes the triangle. Although I've seen people draw this triangle in many different shapes and forms. Sometimes the triangle overlays Florida. Sometimes it overlays Bermuda. Other times it's just like little peaks or tips to each of the points. So
that's why, depending on who you're reading, there may be a different square mile area that you're dealing with. It could be 500,000 square miles. It could be more. It could be less.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't become the Bermuda Triangle until Vincent Gaddis wrote about it in a 1964 article. But that's not where it became popularized. And I think there's a distinction here. You can call it Bermuda Triangle. You can coin that name, but when it comes down to it, Charles Berlitz wrote about the Bermuda Triangle. And when he wrote his book, that's when it took off. This mm-hmm. thing became very popular.
And that was, what, 1970 when he wrote his book?
It was 1974.
Okay.
So it's 10 years after this magazine article. It had 10 years to work its magic, but the magazine article, from what I can see, didn't have a huge impact. But Charles Berlitz, whose family was well known, his grandfather founded the Berlitz Language Schools. So he sort of already had a name. And then he publishes this book and it becomes a big hit.
Did you see the movie, Charles' movie, his book made into the movie?
Yeah, I don't know if I have. I may have many years ago.
The acting in it deserves Oscars. It's great. Just for all everybody out there, you can watch this movie and the acting is amazing.
And it sort of runs you through the stories, correct?
Yeah. In a probably a little bit of a Hollywood way, it runs you through the stories. It gets you introduced to the Bermuda Triangle.
Right. Most of these stories you'll find will be the same five stories or so that are very popularized. The ones that everyone talks about. For this episode, I'm not sure how many we'll cover. I think that's something that the listeners can go and look up, because there are stories out there that you can get into and read about. I do know we'll be covering Flight 19, which is a squadron of five planes.
It was December 1945, Lieutenant Charles Taylor. He was the guy leading the training run. They're all flying Avenger torpedo bombers, and each plane had a pilot, a rear gunner, and then the bombardier and lower gunner. I forgot the name of the lower gunner, but it was the bombardier essentially. And there were five of these planes, right?
There were five of them.
You would say, well, there's five of them, but there was only 14 people missing. There should have been 15. Well, one of the crew members didn't feel like going that day. Maybe he had a bad feeling. According to Charles, he did. But not Charles Taylor, the lead pilot, but Charles, the guy in the guy that wrote the book. he would say that this one flight crew guy had a bad feeling and decided to back out of the of that training that day. Whether or not he did, that's sort of up in the air. So four of the planes had crews of three, and then one of them just had the pilot and the rear gunner. Or maybe he was the pilot and the bombardier. I don't know where the second guy was sitting.
Right. It's also become known as the Lost Squadron. So many people would point out that experienced pilots, they're flying an area that that Charles Taylor knew well. So there's you kind of have to wonder, like, what would happen where you lose five planes? They're doing an exercise to practice
bombing.
So they have a charted course. They know where they're supposed to be going. And we can kind of get into how they operate. So back then, they didn't have the same kind of navigational equipment they have today. They don't have that luxury.
They don't have GPS?
No, they literally have to pay very close attention
to all their instruments and everything.
No, they have to pay close attention to their heading, like where they start from. And then if they make any adjustments while they're flying, they have to be very, very aware of those adjustments. Because if you make a large adjustment, it's probably easier to know, oh, now we're going southeast instead of east. But if you make little small adjustments and you're not paying very close attention, you could easily get off course.
Yeah, and they were supposed to leave Fort Lauderdale, go to the, what was it called? The
Bimini
Islands. And then on to, and then that's where they were doing the kind of the bombing training run. And then on to the Great Harbor Bay, and then on to the Grand Bahama Island, and then make a left turn and come on home. They have multiple turns in this, and the turns are literally 15-degree turn, go 60 miles. So if you don't make a perfect 15-degree turn, by the time you fly 60 miles, you might be 100 miles off course. So it's really, it's detrimental to them if they don't follow the correct path.
They're in communication during the flight so that they can get assistance, because at some point, Charles Taylor says that his compass isn't working. Isn't that right?
Yeah, yeah. But it's towards the end when they're going up to the Grand Bahama Island and they're supposed to pretty much turn left and head back west. He gets confused and his compass isn't reading right, which that's pretty important because his compass is the only thing that's going to tell him which way west is. And this can be very disorienting because all you have is the horizon and the ocean. You know, it's not like you have landmarks here to tell you if you're facing north, you know, south, east, or west. So he has to rely on his compass to tell him which way west is. Now, he can look at where the sun is and kind of figure out, you know, which direction he's going if he knows what time it is and where the sun's at, but maybe he didn't know that.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions about this, about the weather. I noticed that some articles on this do not state that there was any weather for them to be concerned with. And then others say that the sea was whipping up.
Yeah, and literally every documentary I watched on this to tell this story, some of them said the weather was getting worse and worse during their flight, while others said it was fine, it was a clear day, and there shouldn't have been any problem. But we'll come back to that later because I think there probably was bad weather for a different reason. He's calling out on his radio. He says he doesn't know where he is. He says his compass isn't working. And he actually gets, I think, another guy flying. I don't know if it's another military plane or if it's just a commercial plane's flying. He talks to that guy, and he actually talks to ground radio personnel who say, "Where are you at?" And he says, "I'm over the Florida Keys," which is way south of where he should be, or kind of way out of the way, you know, for him to think that he's over the Florida Keys means he's completely off course and not where he thinks he should be.
Yeah, it can be confusing because you have to rely on his being able to tell you the truth, or at least the facts. So if he's confused, which I understand is very possible, because if you're flying, you can end up flying past islands that sort of look like islands you think you've been to or you can identify, and they may not actually be those islands that you think they are.
Yeah, so he's looking at a scattered bunch of islands. He thinks it's the Florida Keys. Could be the Bahama Islands, could be any scattered islands. He doesn't know.
They try to think about where he should be given where he last was. They try to piece together his flight path, and even his own fellow pilots, they seem to take an issue with his course that he's on.
Yeah, there was a fellow pilot named Powers who was saying, we need to fly west. And then the land radio operator was a guy named Jim Ward. And he was like, well, did you make your final left turn to come back west? He goes, it sounds like you're down the coast of, you know, on the Atlantic side of Florida. So if you just fly west, you're going to hit land. And Taylor is like, no, if I'm down in the Keys, I need to fly north. I need to fly, you know, up to get back to land. He's like, I'm not seeing anything. If you listen to it, they're literally having an argument over the radio where he's at, what direction he's going. And that's weird to me. That did all of their compasses stop working, or just Charles Taylor? So I think maybe the Powers guy and others, that I think they knew where they were going, but they have to listen to their lieutenant who's leading the way.
He's basically training these other pilots, but it's not as though they don't have any experience. They've flown quite a bit. It's just piloting these planes. There's a rigorous course that you have to go through.
Yeah.
And so you don't just, oh, you can fly, so you're good. In fact, part of this exercise is teaching them how to navigate and how to look for certain landmarks and know the direction of the wind, know their time of travel, so they can sort of plot where they're at.
Yeah.
And know when to make an adjustment.
I don't use a GPS in my car. I don't, you know, I can read a map just fine. I know where I'm going typically naturally when I'm driving. And funny enough, when I use a GPS, when I totally am completely reliant upon devices and equipment, I get screwed up a little bit. I get turned around a little bit when I'm relying on something that's telling me exactly where to go. So, you know, he doesn't have the luxury of knowing exactly where he's going, especially it's getting to be 5-6 o'clock at night. It's dusk, you know, sun's going down. He has not much to navigate by as soon as that happens. But that's another thing, is the sun's going down. The sun sets in the west. So I kind of wonder, like, didn't that kind of tip him off to maybe his location or direction?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
What is it, about 8 o'clock at night when this finally comes to a head where they say, well, we have to send some planes to go out and look for them?
It was actually the last contact I read was at 7:04 p.m. was the last contact they had with their plane, and they heard the, we're going to have to ditch. I don't know. I mean, it's December, so, but it's Florida. It's sunny Florida. Maybe sunsets at 7. Not sure. You know, they're in a squadron. They're flying in formation. So everyone gets hung up on how do 5 planes disappear? Well, they're all following the leader. I mean, you think lemmings like go off a cliff together. Well, humans will plan to go off the cliff together. And essentially, you're more likely to be found if you stay together. So as opposed to one guy trying to get back to land and then they all crash in different places, they all crash together. So he says, essentially, once we get down to, you know, 10 minutes of fuel, we're all going to ditch in the ocean together.
Well, still, but the question remains, why would 5 planes with a total of 14 men, what would cause them to have this trouble? Of course, there are many theories on this, correct?
Yeah. Why would their compass stop working? I mean, compass is supposed to show you, you know, magnetic north. So what would mess with magnets?
Well, we do know that that area is one of the, it's one of just maybe 2 places on the planet where your
magnetic,
compass.
Yeah. Magnetic north is true north.
Your compass won't work correctly.
Yeah.
But if he's flown supposedly in these areas before,
yeah,
wouldn't he be aware of this?
Yeah. Any seasoned pilot or, you know, captain of a boat, anything, they should be aware.
It begs the question of whether he is looking at his compass and supposedly it's not working, but if he was trying to follow it anyway, it's difficult to say. But certainly there are many different theories, and Flight 19 is, I would say, the most popular Bermuda Triangle case, and it's been argued, how would you get all 5 planes to disappear?
Yeah.
But as you've already mentioned, there's someone in charge. There's Charles Taylor. He's in charge.
Yep.
So, and from the communications, we know that there was some disagreement going on as the flight went on.
I mean, why do you think he was so adamant?
Well, that's going to be guesswork. He's in charge, so he needs to make the call. And so you have ego, you have rank. But it also could be spatial disorientation, which is something that would cause him not to consider other possibilities. Once he's settled on something, he's locked in on it. And much like you might get a hound going after a rabbit and it just won't stop until it gets that rabbit, or you can somehow capture the hound.
I was with my friend, my manager at the time, and we parked in this parking structure and we went into the building and we came back out. And I said, hey, we're parked in this parking structure. And he said, no, we're in this one. And it was either J or K. It was just one of the two. And he said, we're in K. And we walked around K for 45 minutes. And every time I said, we're not in this parking lot, we're in the other one, he got angry. He's like, no, we're not. And we walked around. It was a huge parking structure. So it wasn't like we could walk around real quick and figure it out. But for literally 45 minutes, I fought with my manager and he would not believe me until we covered every inch of that parking structure. And finally, he was like, let's go check out Jay. And we walked over there and boom, there was our car. I think I witnessed, what did you just call it, spatial disorientation, just in a parking lot. I can't even imagine if I'm up in a plane trying to figure out, you know, where I am in the horizon. So it makes sense.
And they're up there with their boss.
Yeah.
That man is in charge of them.
But they have a limited gas tank, whereas we could walk around all day.
Right. You have varying theories out there. You have different so-called experts, people who have spent a good number of years looking into this case. I guess what it comes down to is the Bermuda Triangle, this big area, it's said that they've lost over 1,000 planes and ships. They've lost hundreds of lives. So there must be an explanation. There must be an explanation of why these planes would get lost. When they were communicating at their last, they were being told, you're going away from us.
Yeah, because they could tell from their voices over the radio that it was getting...
They were getting fainter.
Yeah.
Because they were getting further and further away from the tower. And so at certain distances, the signal just isn't coming through as well. And it's not coming through as loud.
By the way, when we were talking about these planes and their lack of GPS, the radio in these planes fills up an entire passenger compartment. Like if you go see one of these planes today that's been refurbished, there's an extra seat in it. That's where the radio was. So these planes could actually fit 4 people. They're big. But the radio was the size of a kitchen table. Because, you know, remember when hard drives used to be the size of like a coffee table? I mean, that's how big the radio was. I don't even know how they get these things in the air. Like, because the radio probably weighed hundreds of pounds. And, you know, to kind of give you an idea of the technology in, you know, 1945, they sent out 2 planes to find.
They were Mariners, right?
Yeah. They were PBM-5 Mariners. And one of them, they suspect, exploded in the sky because it was flying up the coast and all of a sudden it blipped off of the radar. And some boats nearby reported, we just saw something flash in the sky.
Yeah, there was a freighter especially that pointed this out, said it appeared as though it had exploded. So that's another mystery. So you have 5 missing planes. Now there's a 6th plane that, as far as they can tell, probably exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is this all tied together somehow? Yeah. Is there something out in the Bermuda Triangle that makes flying or cruising through there a dangerous proposition? Because it just listening to this story, the Flight 19, you have these experienced pilots just disappearing. Although they do mention they're going to ditch.
Yeah, yeah.
You said at 7:04 they make that call. It has to do with their fuel amount, I believe, right?
Yeah, they said as soon as we get 10 minutes of fuel or whatever, we're all ditching together.
I think it was one of the planes was the lowest, and once they hit a certain amount,
exactly,
they would all ditch together.
Yeah.
So they stayed together. And that's a military thing, right?
Yeah.
It's not like if you and I and TJ and Miriam and Marie were all flying planes, we could probably, like, let's say I had spatial disorientation. I'm like, I know I'm right. I'm going the right direction. And you all were telling me, you're crazy. We are not following you that way.
I know how good you are with directions, Aaron.
I'm not good with directions. So that's why I use myself as the example. So you could all ditch me, like leave me heading my direction that I know I'm going the right way and I can ditch into the ocean and die. But you can go somewhere else. But in a military setting like this, you can't just...
No.
That's not your training. Your training is to listen to the commanding officer.
Yeah. And their logic is you ditch together, so there's more to find when they send out the search and rescue. That's the whole point, is to be, you know, found. They didn't actually send out the full search and rescue for them until 8 hours later. It was in the middle of the night, early morning, before they actually rang the alarm bells and sent everybody out. And I suspect it's because of bad weather, because I can't imagine that they just don't care about 14 pilots in a sixth plane that's exploded in midair. Why wouldn't they send the whole Navy out for that? I'm suspecting that there was a lot of bad weather that night, and that's why it took them 8 hours to send out the rescue party.
It's pretty obvious that the weather wasn't that great. The people that have written about this and said that it was calm and it was clear, that's just not true.
Have you ever been to Florida? If you don't like the weather, wait.
Right, and that's one thing. You read about the Bermuda Triangle out in that area of the Atlantic, the weather can change quickly.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that there would be some weather going on.
It rains every day in Florida. It might only rain for 20 minutes, but it literally rains every day there. I've spent a lot of time in Florida. Bring an umbrella. It's going to rain on you. And it's going to be sunny and amazing too.
The pilots are confused.
Yeah.
They're disagreeing, especially with Taylor. There are theories out there that suggest that something, and this is quite a popular theory, is that something could have enveloped the planes to confuse them, to make their instruments not work properly, and to confuse them. You've heard about this, right?
Is it the electric fog?
Electronic fog, correct.
Sounds like a disco boogie. Yeah. What was the guy's name that had the little Cessna plane or whatever? What was it?
Was it Bruce Gernon?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce his name? Gernon?
That sounds right. When was this? He was flying. It was like 1980s. He says he's flying off the coast and this cloud forms like a tunnel.
Yeah, it surrounds you. And some of the people that talk about this say you can actually look up, straight up or straight down, but then all around you is sort of like this tunnel or like a donut, where you're inside this fog.
Yeah.
And your instruments don't work right and you can't really see.
Yeah.
So now you're flying blind and you can end up way far off course.
And Gernon, he said that he just aimed for the hole, the donut hole, whatever, the tunnel, and went down this tunnel. And he said there were lines, what he perceived as timelines or a spiral kind of thing. And he said it was 10 miles long, you know, enclosed to like 30 feet. And he just booked it, and all his instruments and everything. He was, what's it called? Dead reckoning, when all your instruments are down and you're just flying by the seat of your pants, essentially. They call it dead reckoning. I like that. And he goes through the tunnel, pops out on the other side, and he says he's only been flying for like 30 something minutes, but all of a sudden he's in Miami, or flying over Miami, which should have taken him an hour to get. So some sort of time vortex or Sonic the Hedgehog speed accelerator that he went through. But it's the electric fog that causes your instruments to malfunction.
Yeah, so this is one of the theories that people have put forward.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
There's another theory that would explain missing ships, missing planes, and that is these large methane bubbles that can come up out of the water, and so they can actually displace the water. So like part of the ship, like if you're talking about a ship in the water, the bubble will come up and then the density of the water on one end of the ship will change. Yeah. So then the ship will actually tip.
Yeah, because it's if you imagine when you're in your bathtub and you rip a fart and your little rubber ducky sinks, that's what's happening to freighters. That methane gas goes up into the sky and your instruments in your plane will actually detect that the air is thinner and say that you're much higher, your altitude is much higher than it is. So therefore, if it's off that much, you might try to drop the plane down. Therefore, you're much lower than you think you are, disoriented, and then you can wreck your plane. So that's how the methane ocean fart bubbles can take out, you know, boats and airplanes all at once. Anyways.
So anyway, there are lots of theories. We can't possibly go through them all. And I think one of the reasons I can't is because if you just think about the dialogue that happens between Taylor and the other pilots, it's clear that they're arguing about which direction they're actually going and where they're at. And I would think that if they were enveloped by an electronic fog, or if there were UFOs of some kind, that they wouldn't be talking about the direction they were headed and where they thought they were. They would be saying, oh my God, look out the window. What the hell is that?
Well, according to the Charles guy that wrote the book, according to his movie, they were talking about UFOs. And in the movie, they put a green filter over the film and made them all disoriented and screaming and yelling about how they're being followed and stuff. But when you listen to the actual radio transcript or read it, that's not it at all. It's actually very little radio communication, and Charles Taylor is taking control in the wrong direction. There's no UFOs in the transcript. You can say maybe the electric fog messed with his compass. You know, you can give him that, right?
Yeah, or Berlitz could have been in some sort of fog.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it was 74.
Yeah, I mean, there was some fun loving in 74. And there was disco.
There was disco and there was some fog.
There was the electric slide.
Well, yeah, he slid into some money, I think, because this book became really popular.
Here's the thing. Here's my problem with all these disappearances, Aaron. Right off the bat, they say it's the Bermuda Triangle. And then if you look at the map, you see the pinpoints, the dots where all these disappearances happened. Most of the dots do not fall within the triangle. So then you see a different version of the triangle, or they say, well, it's pretty much everything in between Bermuda and Puerto Rico all the way to the Florida coast. But that's not really a triangle. That's more of an aisle or a passageway.
You split hairs here?
Yes, I am. Because you're going to call it a triangle and you're going to draw a little picture of a triangle. I want you to cross over into the twilight zone of the triangle, you know? There's other disappearances. I mean, do we need to talk about any of those?
It doesn't really... trust us, there are other cases you can read about when you look up the Bermuda Triangle. Ships like the USS Cyclops. Some would say that the Mary Celeste, that ship is attributed to this Bermuda Triangle, the mysteriousness of the triangle. And you can look these up. There are boats with no people on them that show up. There are boats that disappear. There are planes that disappear. There are planes that maybe explode and can't be found. So there is a case history here. And yeah, there are people still researching this today and will say, I found this, and this, and all these other cases that have to do with the Bermuda Triangle. And then they'll almost redraw the lines too to make it fit, because there are so many cases. And the fact of the matter is when you have ships or planes heading out, it's not like when you're driving a car. If you're driving the car and you're driving through a place you haven't been before and your car breaks down, someone might actually pull over, stop, and say, hey, do you need some help?
Or think about, like, when I lived in California, I drove on the 405 through the 101 and the 110 interchanges, two of the most congested, crazy interchanges in all of America. Well, there's probably more wrecks there than anywhere else, but nobody thinks it's a mystery because, well, it's just cars wrecking into each other and they're sitting there on the side of the road. But the difference between this and the Bermuda Triangle, or pretty much anywhere around the Florida coastline, is the water currents there are crazy. And in some of the documentaries I watched, I saw these guys finding wreckage at the bottom of the ocean. And they dive down and they would literally have to anchor themselves. These divers would have to link onto whatever the wreckage was to not be carried away by the current. So the only wreckage, the only wreckage they could find were huge ships or large planes that were heavy enough to sink to the bottom and get wedged into the ocean floor. Whereas smaller boats and whatever, they're probably carried off into the Gulf or out to sea. I mean, the currents there are nutty. So any evidence of the wreck, it just doesn't work out. And anyone that's never been to the ocean or the beach, you know, your mom puts the beach towel down and you run out into the ocean and you start swimming around, and then you look up and you realize that you're a quarter mile down the beach away from your mom. You're carried by the currents. And the currents over in the Bermuda Triangle are crazy. So that can add to a lot of this, not to mention hurricanes and all the other crazy weather they have over there. But when you start to dig into some of these cases, I heard about this German couple that had a yacht. Their yacht was never found. And they say, oh, it's a disappearance. This German couple and their yacht, they disappeared. And then you realize that the German couple actually docked their yacht, went on to land, and either somebody stole their yacht or cut their yacht loose, and it floated off. And the German couple wasn't nowhere to be found. They were just fine. They found a plane at the bottom of the ocean. They were looking for the five bombers, and they found this wreckage of a plane. And after having some of the pieces and parts examined, they realized that it was another, like, spy plane for the military that had wrecked while it was trying to land on a aircraft carrier. When you start to go into each individual story, they make sense. Around the island of Bermuda, it's a weird volcanic formation, and there are hundreds of boat wrecks all around the island of Bermuda. So does the tip of the triangle go to Bermuda Island, or does it envelop the entire island? Because there's hundreds of boat wrecks around the island, just like most islands, because that's what happens. You run a boat ashore.
Yeah, I think we could come up with all kinds of theories to explain these disappearances. It would be guesswork. So I think the best thing to do is, like I said, if the pilots are disagreeing with each other, they're not talking about a flying saucer, flying information with them. They're not talking about being surrounded by a fog.
No, they're not.
So to me, these things can just get pushed to the side because they weren't brought up by the very people who you would think would be concerned about it. Yeah, I think it's most likely that the pilot here who's in charge gets lost, and then perhaps ego or something interferes, and he eventually finds himself in a position where there is no way out.
A book I read a while back, Unbroken, about Louis Zampernini. And then there was the movie that Angeli made. The movie wasn't Unbroken. Louis flew over on the Pacific, and essentially he's flying these bombers back in World War II. And I hate to say it, but our military aircraft back then was crap. Louis was in multiple plane crashes, and eventually he ends up crashing his bomber plane, and he's on a life raft for longer than anyone else has survived on a life raft. And they say that they search for him and they search for him. Our aircraft was crap back then. And I hate to slam on it, but when I read that book and hear about all the horrible things that this man went through, it doesn't make me even think twice about an entire squadron of planes ditching together, because that was just normal back then. I mean, they had ditching procedures because that's how commonplace it was. So, you know, Louis, I mean, he had problems over on the Pacific. So if the Bermuda Triangle is so dangerous, we wouldn't expect there to be other places as dangerous, right?
Yeah, I think it does come down to that. Like, if it's such a high traffic area, we shouldn't be talking about hundreds of people who died and over 1,000 ships and planes. It should be, wow, there were a couple hundred that were lost just last year. Mm-hmm. What constitutes deadly? I heard that they could maybe have 30 boats disappear in a year.
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, shouldn't our number have increased even more in the meantime? And some of these boats have quite a number of people on them.
The magic's gone, though, because now we have GPS. Now we have, what are those things called? EPIRBs or EPUBs, whatever, the emergency broadcasting. It sends out a distress beacon call, whatever. The Coast Guard over there, they save about between 10 and 20 people a day over in the Bermuda Triangle, but they save about 10 or 20 people a day up on the West Coast, in the Gulf Coast, up on by Maine and New York. They say that they're saving essentially the same amount of people in every area of the coastline. They don't report any more or any less. So that's kind of telling if the Coast Guard isn't any more active anywhere else in our nation.
Yeah, but they could be covering it.
Oh, yeah, they could be covering it up.
Could be.
And, you know, going back to Louis on the Pacific side, well, he might have been flying by the Dragon's Triangle, which people say is the Bermuda Triangle of Japan in the east, on the eastern hemisphere over there. So we have multiple triangles now, man. It's not just the Bermuda Triangle anymore. We have some other places that are just as dangerous. But I have to say that there's nothing against anyone out there who works for insurance companies, because, you know, you're doing a job and you're doing a great job. But all my life, I've fought with my insurance companies. They will charge me premiums depending on my zip code. They will try to screw me out of every single claim, and they just really try to squeeze as much money out of me for any reason they can all the time. And when you go and check insurance premiums for boats that are insured to go through the Bermuda Triangle, there's no premium. Insurance companies don't target the Bermuda Triangle as any more or less dangerous than pretty much anywhere else. Now, if you're driving your boat along like the coast of Africa, where there's pirates and stuff like that, you got a more of a premium there. But as far as coastlines around America, they don't charge you any more. They don't identify that area. And they could very easily, but they don't. So of all the people that could cash in on this idea that this is a dangerous area, why aren't insurance companies doing that? I don't know. I mean, that's where I'm kind of, that's the nail in the coffin for me, that I don't believe that this is any more dangerous than anywhere else.
Well, another thing is, it's continually pointed out that they didn't find anyone. They didn't find the plane. They didn't find a ship. They almost always find something. But that's not necessarily true, because, well, the ocean's a huge place.
Yeah.
I mean, it covers so many square miles. You can't just say, well, we're going to go over here and we'll find them. I mean, they don't know exactly where they were at. They can try and figure it out. But again, they're starting to guess because they weren't there.
Well, yeah. And in the case of Flight 19, 8 hours later, they're searching for them. How far can you float in an ocean current for 8 hours? You could probably flow hundreds of miles. Why didn't they find anything? Because there's strong currents down there.
Well, there were some tests done to try and see how visible a person would be in the water. Because they can't stay on the planes. The planes are heavy enough and the ocean's whipped up enough that these planes will just go under. They said that under ideal conditions, these planes could maybe float for a couple minutes. But given the state they're in, they're not going to be floating for 2 minutes. They'll be sinking right away. They had someone in an orange vest go in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were in a helicopter. So they took the helicopter out and went out a little ways and came back to the area they were pretty sure they left that person in, who's wearing a bright orange vest. That doesn't work out well. They have a hard time spotting someone because there's movement in the water. So there's constantly different contrasts.
Yeah.
Darker gray, black. And you have someone floating in there, you have to know exactly where to look. And that's what you said earlier about, you know, a debris field possibly on the water, where if there's all these planes going in together, maybe they'll leave stuff that will be easier to spot than a person.
Mm-hmm.
It's explainable in that way, that they listen to their commanding officer and they ditch. That's it. They aren't going to make it. There's no way that they would just be able to float out there that whole time.
No. Especially when they don't actually start searching for them until 8 hours later. What are they going to find? You missed your window. Sorry.
And I have read that it was not the fault of the pilots, that they should have been told what to do. But it certainly sounded as though they were telling them what to do. They were telling them to go west.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side, you have Taylor saying, I can't, because that's not the way I'm supposed to go. So Taylor is not listening to the advice he's being given. Yet some people will say, oh, that's not his fault. It must be the tower's fault. It must be someone else's fault.
Yeah, it must be the fault of the electric fog, or the fault of the UFO or the USO. Or sadly, they don't want to point the finger at human error, but to error is human.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really missing when you go to these different sites. Human error doesn't seem to be on their list.
Yeah, yeah. All the causes.
Magnetic anomalies, methane bubbles, water spouts, you name it.
Rogue waves.
Oh, rogue wave, yeah.
But you know,
tsunamis.
Yeah, rogue waves are real. I totally believe they're real, but are they that common of an event that happens all the time to take out boats all the time? Is this methane bubble happening all the time? If it is, then I think we would see it a lot more, and it just doesn't seem to be the case. I know everyone pretty much believes that this has been debunked over and over again, but why has it been debunked? Most people will just say, well, there's no more wrecks there than anywhere else, but let's really analyze that. There's no more wrecks there than anywhere else, and the size of the triangle is changed all the time to accommodate more wrecks. Insurance companies don't charge you anymore for being there. The Coast Guard doesn't even recognize it. What was the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, series where the Kraken, you know, they
had... Dead man's chest.
Yeah, and, you know, they have all these things, but then by kind of the end of the series, the West is taking over and the magic and the mysticism of the pirates and stuff is kind of dying off. And that's what's happening today, is we're starting to pull the wool back and open the curtain and look behind it and realize that there's nothing to it, and it's just a story that persists.
Right. It's kind of a bummer because so many people were interested in the Lost Squadron, and then as you read up on it, you discover that these people that report on this case tend to leave things out. So they're doing everyone a disservice by doing that, because then they can't get to the truth. But when you look up these different craft or ships that have gone missing, or the people on board have gone missing, there seem to be explanations for them. I know there was one large ship that was carrying cargo, and that ship disappeared. Well, come to find out that the ship was not very well maintained and probably shouldn't have been out there to begin with. We've talked about something like that before.
Yeah, on our Joyita episode, right?
Right. And so when you have a ship basically in disrepair, then you're taking a chance, because as I said before, you can't just pull off the side of the road out there. If something goes wrong, your ship can just drop under.
And that would be human error once again.
Right. There seem to be explanations. And what I mean by that is, if you like, you can say it was an alien that did it, or you can actually read up on it and find out, like in the case of that Mariner that ended up exploding, they were literally flying gas tanks.
Yeah.
So if you...
Pintos of the sky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So just imagine, they know this has happened at times where someone on board the plane will decide to light a cigarette.
And they have oxygen tanks and all, you know, it's just a bad idea.
Yeah, I think one thing that I took away from this is, so you can explain what probably happened, but there are stories that are mysterious. They're a little difficult to verify, but they're interesting stories, and they have to do with electronic fog or what have you. But I noticed that most people that are involved in this, they don't seem to believe that it's some sort of paranormal thing that's happening. Any way you look at it, there's probably mundane explanations or very good explanations for all of these cases, but there are still cases that are mysterious that I don't think everything has been systematically gone through and quote unquote debunked, but that's just how it's going to be. You're not going to have the answer to every single incident that happens in world history. So you have a large ship and it breaks apart, it sinks. They don't know exactly where it was. So you can say, oh, well, they looked and they didn't find anything. Sure.
Well, I mean, we covered the Malaysian flight, you know. We have a pretty good idea where this flight was, but they still couldn't find it.
Yeah, that's modern era. I noticed that some of these Bermuda Triangle investigators will say something similar to that and say, wow, we weren't able to find them. We looked for them. We couldn't find them. So they'll actually attempt to find them. They'll plot what their course likely was. And there have been searches done. I think the simple explanation is that the ocean's a very, very large place. If a boat or a plane goes down in it, chances are you're not going to find it. Because one, you don't know where you're looking, and two, the currents are too strong. And three, a lot of these objects are pretty damn heavy. Mm-hmm. So they just sink right into the ocean. So I wouldn't expect to find them. Just imagine dropping a person in this 500,000 square mile area, drop them into the water. What are the chances you'll ever find them? It's too large of an area just to, oh, I'm going to go out for a couple hours. I'll be back. Yeah. I would say look into this case if you are interested in it and you want to read about all these different stories there are associated with it. You're only going to be able to take away what you're willing to take away from it. Is there anything else you want to say?
There's one thing I could add to that is I don't like it when people say, oh, a police officer witnessed this, or, oh, the military's on it. So we have the most professional, you know, with it people on the planet. I was in the Army. Let me tell you, it's not the best run operation. they're all human and they make mistakes just as much as anyone else. And just because they do a good job for what they do, but accidents happen and mistakes are made. I remember in Black Hawk Down, they got turned around and, you know, they had to drive back through enemy territory like three times before they could go and extract these soldiers. It's not as perfect as people like to make it out. You know, these are professional people, but mistakes are made. They are human.
And it can be hard to admit a mistake. So Charles Taylor could say, nope, you guys are all wrong. I'm right. You have to think when he's giving him the command to ditch, he knows he screwed up. Because that has to be a hard command to give that you're going to ditch. Because there's no one nearby. He knows when he goes in there, they're likely goners.
They're likely going to die.
So they said that once they ditched, that they just had seconds. And then, boom, the sinking.
Submerged.
Again, I think I would be more interested in these alternate theories if they had given some indication of them while they were communicating. Now, some might say, oh, well, it happened after they stopped communicating. Maybe when
But it didn't. It happened while they were communicating. He says compass stopped working. And then they got into an argument.
Right. It's almost like they were oblivious to what was happening to them. If you want to believe that, the other theory anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't describing a cloud. You already said all this. You know, they weren't describing UFOs. It just was, we don't know where we're going. Go west. No. Okay. Now you die.
And again, if it really was a deadly triangle, this number would have increased in all these decades since they put forward these theories.
Gone down with technology.
I think that's the best evidence that we have. I know that there has been research. There have been more missing boats, missing planes. But the problem is we don't have thousands of them. This is not a deadly triangle. Again, we already talked about the heavy traffic. The insurance rates aren't worse. Even thinking about these other theories just seems patently ridiculous, right? The takeaway from this, spatial disorientation can happen to you. So if you have people telling you, look, we've already spent 45 minutes looking for the car in this parking structure. We've not found it. It's probably in the structure next to this one.
When you're leaving Lollapalooza or whatever music festival it is and you're wasted and trying to find the car, just remember this conversation.
Yeah, you may think you know. But if you have everyone else telling you no, you're wrong, let them try their theory first, because you may be suffering spatial disorientation and then you look like a fool. I think we've all done it at one point or another. We've all been sort of guilty of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Bermuda Triangle. I know we have at least one listener who's headed out that way soon. And I told him to stay safe, but honestly, I think we all know he'll be fine. But Ed, if you're listening, yeah, if you see any electronic fog,
take a picture.
Yeah, get a picture of it. Hopefully your camera survives, your phone. But we'd love to hear about it if you see some. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.